Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Having a party? Whatever you're celebrating, Whole Foods Market has everything you need for a spectacular event. Premium meats, prepared foods, desserts, and more. Start every celebration at Whole Foods Market.
The animated series Avatar: The Last Airbender premiered nearly 20 years ago, and it's correctly regarded as a classic. It tells the story of a boy named Aang who must learn how to harness the power of air, water, earth, and fire, and ultimately save the world.
Now the series is getting a live-action adaptation, and its first season just dropped on Netflix. But how does it hold up to the beloved original? I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we are talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Third Love. Third Love makes solutions for every bra problem. Give yourself more lift, smoothing, and get straps that stay put. Every style's wear-tested on real women, made from premium materials, with a virtual fitting room to help you find your perfect fit. Comfort and support are guaranteed. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with code PODCAST15. Support for NPR and the following message come from our sponsor, Whole Foods Market. Planning a party or honoring a recent grad? Whatever the celebration, Whole Foods Market can make things easy, starting with some delicious marinated steaks, always antibiotic and hormone-free. Simple and easy eats are ready in the prepared foods department. And for dessert, how about a luscious berry chantilly cake? Not in the mood to cook? Their catering menu offers festive options ready to order online at shop.wfm.com. Start every celebration at Whole Foods Market. This message comes from NPR sponsor, the official Hacks podcast from Max. Join the creators and showrunners of Hacks as they discuss each episode and speak with the cast and crew about the making of the series. Listen to the official Hacks podcast wherever you get your podcasts. This message comes from NPR sponsor Squarespace. Kickstart or update written content on any website, product description, or email with Squarespace AI, generating instant, personalized results that know and show your brand identity. Explain what your site is about, choose your tone, and enter what you need to get short or long-form text. No matter the placement, Squarespace AI makes it easier to go live, stand out, and succeed online. Use code HAPPYHOUR to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Joining us today is NPR producer Mallory Yu. Welcome, Mallory.
Thanks, Stephen. Always fun to be here.
Always fun to have you. Also with us is one of our producers here on Pop Culture Happy Hour, Liz Metzger. Hey, Liz.
Hi, Stephen.
So the original animated Avatar: The Last Airbender ran on Nickelodeon for three seasons from 2005 to 2008. It spawned a successful sequel called The Legend of Korra, as well as a catastrophic movie version directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Let us never speak of it again. Now Avatar has been rebooted once again, this time as a live-action series on Netflix. The show stars Gordon Cormier as Aang, a young boy who inherits the role of the Avatar, a hero with the power to restore balance to the nations of Earth. Aang is the last of his tribe of airbenders. They have the power to manipulate the wind. In the show's first episode, we see the airbenders wiped out in an attack by the Fire Nation, whose firebenders have plunged the world into war. During the attack, Aang is enveloped by the ocean and sealed in a block of ice, where he remains for 100 years. Eventually, he awakens and is discovered by two members of a water tribe, a scrappy boy named Sokka, played by Ian Ousley, and his sister Katara, played by Gawandio. She's learning how to be a waterbender. Soon, the three of them are targets of the Fire Nation, whose power is threatened by the Avatar's return. They're pursued across the world by, among others, Prince Zuko and his uncle Iroh. They're played by Dallas Liu and Paul Sun-Hyung Lee. Avatar: The Last Airbender is streaming on Netflix now. Liz Metzger, I'm going to start with you. What do you think of the show?
I think this show is a pretty good little show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very expensive show, but it's a pretty good little show. It just happens to be adapting one of the most beloved animated shows.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there were really two standout performances for me. And I think it's just because these people felt like they were those characters in their own way. I really like Dallas Liu as Zuko. Wow.
The plan is to prove my father wasn't wrong to trust me with this mission. The plan is to go in and capture the Avatar once and for all. The plan is to reclaim what's rightfully mine.
And I thought Ian Ousley was great as Sokka.
Yeah.
There are some really beautiful costuming.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing that I kept missing in this show was joy.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show about war. This is a show, and we've seen a lot of shows about war. We see a lot of shows about kids having to grow up too fast. But what I really loved about the animated show is there's a goofiness, there's a silliness, because it makes the moments of joy feel a lot more joyful. It's the moments that make the heavy parts feel heavier, because it really figures out its tone. And this show has a little bit of a tone issue. And so we do have moments of joy, but they feel very fleeting compared to some of the very heavy moments. But I liked it. It's just compared to a really great classic. So I'm going to want to be really kind to it. But it was a little bit of a disappointment.
I'm glad you mentioned the relative lack of joy. I think there's also a relative lack of meditativeness.
Yes.
The original show had a tendency to occasionally pause and, like, we're just going to sit in this place and reflect.
Mm-hmm.
The streamlining that goes on here, they've whittled 20 half-hour animated episodes into 8 more or less hour-long live-action episodes.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That, by necessity, changes the pacing in ways that kind of don't let this story breathe quite as much. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. We're going. We're moving. We are going to meet, like, all the side characters that you once loved. We're going to meet them in 30 minutes, which worked sometimes.
Excellent. All right. How about you, Mallory?
I agree with everything Liz just said. The costumes are so cool. I think the hair, I have to say, I was really impressed by the wigs on this show, because usually wigs are disastrous.
Big.
And this is the live action adaptation I was excited to get with the M. Night Shyamalan version way back when.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, watching this adaptation was really gratifying and really fun, because it's visually just so lush. But I totally agree with the lack of joy critique. There's just something stiff about this adaptation. Like, there's no playfulness. Aang is not the goofy kid that you watch take on the mantle of responsibility and choose that responsibility. He just kind of accepts it in the first 30 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
And it makes...
He's kind of a mope, too.
And it sort of makes his, like, emotional journey less powerful through the season, because you don't really get to see the difference between Aang, who has been sheltered from war for 100 years, versus Katara and Sokka, who are children who grew up in war. And you don't really get to see the contrast between their attitudes, at least initially. I think because this show is 8 episodes versus, say, a 20-episode arc, you lose a lot of those, like, small character moments. And that's what I was missing.
Yeah.
And I keep coming back to the question, who is this for? Because it doesn't necessarily feel like it's meant to usher in new fans.
Yeah.
And it definitely doesn't feel meant for, you know, say, OG fans who now have young kids that they might want to be sharing this with. And I definitely would not let a young child watch, like, so many people get burned alive on screen in nearly episode.
My God, no.
I liked a lot of it, but ultimately I felt like it was less than the sum of its parts.
Gotcha. How about you, Glenn?
You know, it's strange. I had this initial reflexive, full-body negative reaction when this thing started. And then I had to kind of take a breath and interrogate that, because it's like, Glenn, you love this world. You love these characters. You love this story. What are you reacting to? And after some back and forth, I came down to the, I know this sounds bad, but, like, to the YA of it all. I wasn't prepared for it. And I should have been. That's on me. Because when I was watching the all-ages animated series on Nickelodeon, I just thought, okay, well, this is a kid's show that I love. But all of the stuff that I objected to here, the simplicity of it, the directness of it, it didn't really register. I'd watch the original series and the dialogue would be as incredibly on the nose as it was. Like, whenever anyone talked, they'd either be explaining what needs to happen or what just happened or what is happening right now, or explaining exactly what they were feeling at the moment they were feeling it, or, you know, doing a comedy bit. And that all that stuff rolled off. And it was like, this is what I'm here for. Fine, it works. In live action, especially in the early going, that same simplicity, that same directness, that same punishingly expository dialogue, geez, we've gone from two dimensions to three dimensions, but we haven't added any dimensions to the dialogue now.
Yes.
So, like, I'm not coming here for nuance and emotional sublimation, but I just needed to adjust my expectations. And once I did, I kind of got into it. I think it got easier as it went along because I liked it when the story got darker and the stakes got higher. Just logistically, because everyone had less time to keep telling each other what was happening. But it was an adjustment I eventually made.
I had a very similar journey to Glenn. The opening scene in the very first episode of this show involves an earthbender kind of fleeing, pursuing firebenders through a dark alley at night. And watching it, I'm just sitting there, arms folded, like, this looks like a video game from 2011.
Ouch.
And over time, first of all, it comes to look better. Second of all, I dropped some of my guard. Mm-hmm. Which is very similar to the guard that mm-hmm. Glenn had going.
Mm-hmm.
And I ultimately found it engrossing and realized and remembered how much I loved swimming around in this world watching the original cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
It made me appreciate the story more, and it made me appreciate why somebody would want to go back and retell this story. This is a wonderful, rich piece of world building, and it makes sense that people would want to go in and retell this story. I don't think that the end result fully answers the question, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why did we need a live-action version of this
mm-hmm.
as opposed to an expansion mm-hmm. of this? Legend of Korra is a sequel that builds on these ideas with new characters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I should say that there are several new animated projects being developed from the original animated series creators. Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Konietzko, they were slated to be the showrunners for the live-action new series, but they left citing creative differences with Netflix, and they were replaced by showrunner Albert Kim. And they've since formed Avatar Studios to expand the animated franchise, including an animated sequel film. So I'll be excited to see what they do with that. There are so many unexplored territories in this world, and you could tell a different story instead of just retelling the one we already know. So I don't think this version fully resolves that question of why, so much as it's an interesting curiosity that I did find myself enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
And when it wound to a close, I was ready for season two. I love this world. I deeply love the original mm-hmm. piece. I think this basically does it justice. I have some quibbles with some of the streamlining that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, on balance, I guess I'm glad it's there, and I hope it kind of compels people to keep coming back to this story and keep sharing this story.
Yeah, I mean, the cast is so fun to watch mm-hmm. that, if anything, I'm glad that they all have this job.
Yeah.
Because, like, Dallas Liu's Zuko, Paul Sung-hyung Lee's Uncle Iroh are just a joy to watch.
Ah, good. It's not too late.
What are you doing here, Uncle?
Same as you. Getting ready to embark on what is sure to be a memorable journey.
You want to come with me?
I've come fully prepared. All the tea I need.
Dallas really just encapsulates that angsty teenage Zuko that I loved, and I am excited to watch his Zuko grow through the seasons as much as we're going to be able to see with all the streamlining.
I think that, like, Stephen, you were asking, like, why are we doing this? And so much of the why that I kept watching was, like, it's really great to see a ton of new Asian and, like, indigenous characters playing characters that are, like, written to be Asian indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a really great joy to see a lot of also actors mm-hmm. I'd seen in other things.
Mm-hmm.
And we see some Pim 15 Hive is definitely being represented.
Mm-hmm.
Even May December fans will find a great joy in Azula. So
yep.
I think there was so much that I was like, oh, you were a small part, but you are now playing a very beloved character. And most of them are really pulling it off. And I think that was enough for me to say, like, I'm going to probably keep watching it because of them.
Yeah, I'm glad, Stephen, you mentioned that the effects, they're not janky across the board.
Right.
That final episode is a really big swing, and it looks great, and they spent their money there.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember the first time in the first episode you see Appa take off into the air from a distance, I heard myself say out loud, oh, no, oh no, because it looked so bad. And in terms of justifying its existence, I mean, I'm a simple man, Stephen. Narratively, no, this does not justify. Aesthetically, yes. I wanted to see bending in live action. I wanted to see this world. I wanted to see the Fire Lord's throne room. Fire Lord's throne room looks great. I think the fight choreo and the effects, which they realized they needed to focus on, worked for me. Mm-hmm. Although with waterbending, something happened. I didn't realize this, but like the transition between her sending a wave of animated water at an enemy, then you cut to the enemy and they're just kind of wet. You know, that never occurred to me that would be the effect. But
it
that's
doesn't
like,
seem devastating. It seems like water balloon.
Oh, here's a towel. You know, it didn't. Again, adjustment. I had to make an adjustment.
Well, you guys mentioned the performances. I wanted to talk, like, kind of what were – you mentioned Dallas Liu, and you mentioned Paul Sun-Hyung Lee as Uncle Iroh. And Uncle Iroh, that's a really hard one to get right, in part because you already – fans of the original show already had to adjust to the death of Mako, who was that iconic voice in the first couple seasons, and how they had to adjust his voice. I wanted to get a sense of how you felt about all these performances. Were there any characterizations that didn't work for you? Were there any that you were particularly pleased with?
I think it goes back to tone. I will say I struggled a little with Aang. And the core three. There are moments of joy that I felt in the second episode. We're on the island. We are meeting a bunch of people. I like it when they get to be young. They have a lot of joy. When these characters have to be really heavy and deal with some things, I think, like you were talking about, Glenn, the directness in the lines. They feel like green actors in some moments when they have to talk about being direct and heavy things. But there were moments of levity that I really liked. I liked, I love seeing Azula earlier.
Yeah.
I think I liked adding more of the Fire Nation lore in the season one. I thought it was so interesting. I thought it built stakes. I'm really excited for where we're going to see them. And I'm glad that we're going to see them more in season two and three, hopefully, if this gets renewed. So that, like, is something I really did enjoy.
I will say I find it very confusing for Daniel Dae Kim to be playing Fire Lord Ozai, who is such a horrible, like, evil villain, because it's, like, kind of warring with my attraction for Daniel Dae Kim.
Zuko has found the Avatar.
Your brother has done the impossible, just as I'd asked.
He doesn't generally play evil characters.
No.
It's been fun to watch him kind of chew the scenery in an evil way.
And when it comes to kid actors, there's always a trade-off, right? Because some of the kid acting on display here is of a very specific species of kid acting, which is that super emotive, use all of the face Disney Channel kid acting. And some of those kids go on to be, you know, to be great. But the advantage here is that they're actual kids. They're not chain-smoking 32-year-olds with gambling debt and alimony payments, you know, pretending to be 16-year-olds. They're actual kids.
There are no crow's feet.
There are no crow's feet here.
Yeah, it was nice to see Gawain Dio as Katara, remembering her from Rutherford Falls. It's nice to kind of connect the dots to other shows we love. I did think Ian Owsley as Sokka, I found myself, like, Googling pictures of the real actor to be like, did they CGI that kid's face to look exactly like Sokka?
And the voice too.
Yeah, voice.
Can I just say that the condensation of the storyline actually didn't bother me that much? I mean, I thought, though, it did do the opposite of what it was intended to do. It's intended to get us to the fireworks factory, keep the stakes high. It just called out those moments when they weren't driving the plot ahead. Aang would say, I have to get, because he was always saying what he needed to do. Aang would say, I have to get to the Northern Water Tribe. We're running out of time, but I have to help these people here. And in a 20-21 episode season, you're like, fair, go nuts.
Yeah.
But in an 8-episode season, you're like, you're going to spend 2 episodes in Omashu? Really?
Yeah.
This is the thing about the wonderful thing about having the series, the real series, the original series, is that we can always go back. If you miss a plot detour, you can always go back. But I remember I told Faust the first episode, if they skip Ko the Face Stealer, I'm going to revolt, because that is the creepiest, the best, the queerest character in the Avatar universe.
Yeah.
Voiced here by George Takei, so I'm not, it's not just me saying it. I was so happy they did that. And I'm also glad that he looked as good as he did. I thought that character was doing what he needed to do.
I also have to say, and this gets back to, I believe it was Mallory's point, this is not a kid's show. And the Ko the Face Stealer stuff is legit terrifying.
Yep. Yeah. Wasn't the show, too. Wasn't the original cartoon, I remember.
Yeah.
It makes me excited to see things, some of the darker things from the animated series, like bloodbending. Really excited for Katara to do that.
Yeah.
To Glenn's point about the pacing of it all, the condensing of the storylines, it's been a while since I've watched the original, so I also didn't mind some of the condensing, although my partner was like in my ear, like, oh, we're meeting this character already. Oh, we're doing this. Like, what about this? And it was like, okay.
Oh, I suppose we're doing this now.
Let me just watch the show for what it is. Watch the show that's in front of me. I had a problem with the 8-episode format, I think, because like we have all been saying, I think I was missing some of the more of those character moments, some of the joy and the playfulness, a few of the little detours, like Aang wanting to go to Kyoshi Island because he wants to like ride a turtle duck or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are ways for them to have done that if they had given themselves maybe 13, 40 to 50 minute episodes, mm-hmm. where you could have like just a little bit more time per episode to focus on the core three and their dynamic and their figuring out of that dynamic. The way that it is now, it's like they almost immediately gel. And I think you sort of miss a little bit of that development. So I'm not really sure, like that's not really a useful critique, but that's kind of how I felt as I was watching it. Like this episode has too yeah. much in it, but also I'm not getting enough of Aang, Katara, and Sokka.
Yeah.
Even though they're on screen most of the time, you know?
Yeah. You kind of undo some of the benefits that you get from making a TV show instead of a movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Trying to distill this story down to a movie is a literal fool's errand embarked upon in a literally foolish way. I think one of the big things I took away from the experience of kind of binging this 8-hour spectacle is I want it to do well, in part because I want more of these stories to be told. Mm-hmm. I want this world to get built out more, in part because I, like you, Mallory, I'm really pining for some of the meditativeness that really, really drew me into the original series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Avatar: The Last Airbender. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Mallory Yu, Liz Metzger, Glenn Weldon, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Always great to be with y'all.
Thank you.
We want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. If you haven't signed up yet, want to show your support, and listen to this show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Hafsa Fathima and Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all tomorrow.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Sattva. Sattva luxury mattresses are every bit as elegant as the most expensive brands, but because they're sold online, they're about half the price. Visit SAATVA.com/NPR and save an additional $200.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the American Cancer Society. Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. By the end of this message, you could do something about it with your donation. Donate today at cancer.org.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.